And good evening, everybody. Welcome to the latest edition of We Got Next. I'm Ricky Hansen, along with Big Mo, former Big Milwaukee Bucks center, Paul Mokeski, coming to you on a Monday evening. What's up, Mo?
What's going on, man? NBA playoffs, full
speed. It is the best time of year, man. We got the playoffs here, and everybody that's in the playoffs got a chance. We saw 1-8 last night, and we're going to go through all the games when Miami upset Milwaukee. We're going to get through all the games, but before we get to the games, man, you played us some great. You had some great playoff battles during your career, especially some of those battles with the Sixers and Celtics that are NBA classics even till today. And when you step into the postseason, what changes?
Well, you know, the regular season in the NBA is 82 games. It's a marathon. You know, you got 8 months playing a lot, and then traveling and injuries and ups and downs. So it's a marathon, and you know, the better teams get through it, you know, the best ways they can. The NBA playoffs is I don't see it as a sprint, because if you go to the NBA finals, you play another 2 months. You could actually play 28 more games, but I see it as a mid-level race, right? But you get in the regular season, say you're Milwaukee, you play Miami on Thursday, then you go play the Knicks on Saturday, and then you play the Detroit on Sunday. So games come really fast at a fast rate, a fast clip. Now you have scout reports and breakdowns and video sessions and all that, but you're in a short, in a short clips. When you get ready for a 7-game series, as soon as you know who you're going to play in the first round, that's what I did for a few years in Dallas. You know, I go and watch the team we're going to play. I watch hours and hours and hours of video. I know all their plays, all their diagrams, all their play calls. I can be behind the bench yelling if we're playing with Suns and they say 15 side, I'll tell you it's a side pick and roll with the 5 and the 1. I know exactly what's coming. All tendencies. I'll have written up all the last second plays throughout the year. If they needed 1 point, 2 points, 3 points, what did they tend to run? Because coaches are creatures of habit, and they're going to run the same things that were successful for them. So preparation, we know exactly how many times Embiid shoots a post move to his left shoulder, to his right shoulder. When he dribbles left, how many times does he pull up and shoot? How many times does he go all the way? What percentage of that? We know where to push him, how to push him, where to trap him. All that information is in the coach's hands, and then we disseminate it and give it to the players in chunks. So, you know, you're going to know who you're going to guard, what he loves to do, what plays are coming. You'll also key on, you know, if you're a point guard, you can key on 2 or 3 calls from the other team where they'll tell you if a pick and roll is coming because you know the call. So all that is very detailed, and decisions are made. And then in a 7-game series, you know, like all these teams that played the first game, win or lose, you're going to go through that game as a coaching staff and say, okay, this was our game plan going in. This worked. Maybe we double-teamed and beat all the time. This didn't work. Maybe we closed out too hard on Harden, and we're going to adjust some things, or we're going to keep some things the same. So there's constant adjustments in a 7-game series. And, you know, the other thing you have to do as a coaching staff, you have to keep the players on keel, because in a 7-game series, you're going to win a big game, and then you're going to lose a big game, and then you're going to win a big game, and you're going to lose a big game. But you got to keep the players more on this kind of level, or, you know, this is a winner. This is a must win. Well, guess what? Every team's a must win. So if you start treating must wins, there could be three must wins in a series. So put too much pressure on the players. You want them to play like they can play, and it's a different feel. And of course, as I know, and as players know, and coaches know, as you go along in the NBA playoffs, the mounting coverage, the mounting stories that are out there just grow and grow. I remember with the Dallas Mavericks, we got through the second round and the third round. And, you'll go to shoot around before a game. There'll be, 50, 60 during the playoffs, 70 reporters there. When you get to the NBA finals, like I did against the Miami Heat, there's 300 or 400 reporters there from all over the world. And everybody wants an interview with a player or a coach. And you got to really monitor that also. And you have to monitor what you say. So after games you win, you give all the credit to the other team. Maybe we got lucky, we played okay. And if you lose, you just say, well, we need to play better. You don't give any hints of, what you're doing or how you feel. It's so interesting to me to see how coaches react and players react. And you'll see, that's why you give credit to the coaches that have been there before. Doc Rivers, Steve Kerr, Budenholzer, they've all been there before, so they know the game. And the guys, Darvin Ham, the coach in Boston, they've never been a head coach in an NBA Finals or semifinals before. Different feel.
Yeah, hey, Paul, with the advent of technology just getting more and more sophisticated, is that playing a role in the preparation too, where guys may put in, look up everything they do in the last 2 minutes of the season of a game and throw it in the computer to come up with tendencies? Or is that already occurring?
Well, I think the coaches and players come up with tendencies, but every NBA team has 3, 4, 5 video coaches, one main guy. And, if when I'm with the Dallas Mavericks, say we're playing the Spurs in the playoffs, I give my computer to the, when I'm in the locker room, I give my computer to the video people. They plug it in and download all the video while the game is going on. And then about 30 minutes afterwards, they hand me back my computer and every play is broken down into exactly what it was. A half court, full court, against the zone, against man, everything is broken down. So I can push a couple buttons and get every high pick and roll that the Spurs ran that game and see it. Did we play it like we were supposed to? We were supposed to trap it. Did we trap it? How many times did we trap it and it worked, and did we not trap it and it didn't work? And then I can put together a whole clips for myself and get it to the head coach and eventually to the players in a meeting and say, listen, we were supposed to trap the high pick and roll. And when we did it 12 times in the game, and every time we stopped them. And then we got lackadaisical, we didn't focus, and we missed five pick and rolls that were supposed to trap, and they scored every time. So that's what you got to work on. Yeah. Or we can say, listen, we trapped it 15 times, and even when we did, they scored 12 of them, so we're not trapping it anymore.
Right.
We're going to go under or whatever. So, but the video part is it's a visual thing for the coaches. Like if we're on the road, I get that computer, I'm on the plane breaking that down, and then I'm showing it to the head coach, or I might have something that Dirk Nowitzki should have been guarding Tim Duncan a different way, and I got about 10 clips, about 3 minutes worth. I'm going to go see if he's awake and he's not sleeping. I'm going to go sit next to Dirk and say, hey, Dirk, let's watch this when you're guarding Tim Duncan and see what he does here and see what he did here. And, for tomorrow, in the next game, you might want to do this. All that is available. And
so the scouting has become far more sophisticated than when you played.
Well, scouting and coaching. If I can go sit next to Dirk, just me and Dirk, and we don't have to go through the whole game. I can go through every possession that Dirk guarded Tim Duncan. Maybe there's 20 of them in the game. I can write down before I see him what we did. Was it successful or not? Did you foul him? And then I can go through them one-on-one. He can watch them. And then I can give him the numbers. Hey, when you push him left, he struggles to score. When you let him go right, he scores easily. So we need to push him left more. That registers in his brain just one-on-one on the airplane. And then tomorrow we can talk about it in practice. It's, you know, it's a great tool. Now, there's ways to approach players. Like, I'll tell you this. So I got the same scenario, right? I want to show them these clips against Tim Duncan. And I get up from my seat and I look down where the players are. And Dirk has a towel over it, has a blanket over his head, and he's sleeping. I'm not going to go over and tap him on the shoulder. Hey, Dirk, let me show you this. This is great stuff. Look at this stuff. No, and some young coaches do that, and players hate it, and it's the wrong thing to do. I'm going to find the right time to show Dirk those clips. It might be tonight. It might be tomorrow at the hotel after breakfast. You know, it might be after shoot around. Hey, Dirk, you got 5 minutes? Let me show you this. But there's different ways to do it, and some young coaches do it the wrong way, and it has a negative connotation.
Yeah, that is such a great, that is an absolute great point. And that gives us great insight to what happens behind the scenes, especially in these playoff series where there are always adjustments.
Here's the other thing, like, Ricky, on that. Like, so I got 50 clips for Dirk. I'm not going to show him 50 clips. I'm going to show him 12 or 13, you know, that make my point. That's the other thing you can do. Like, overzealous coaches, I got all these clips. Look at all these. No, I'm going to get it. Make it simple, distinct, quick, so he has attention, and then I'm going to leave him alone.
Yeah, and welcome, everybody, to the show. You're watching We Got Next. I'm Ricky Hampton, along with Paul Mokeski and Steve Schroeder. Steve, what's up, man? We appreciate you being on time. No fine for Steve tonight. He said, "Let's go Bucks and the Big Mo." We're gonna get to that series. That obviously took an interesting turn yesterday with Giannis going down. And as Paul is one of the things you always say, tell me who's healthy, and I'll tell you who's going to win. Availability, absolutely. And, of course, as always, you can check out this and other shows on Believe.com. That's Believe.com, BLEAD.com, or any of the your favorite podcasts, wherever you get your favorite podcast, just look for We Got Next, and you should be able to find us there. But Mo, I want to get into some of these games that are going on right now. We got game two of the Philly New Jersey series, and got a close game in Philly. The Sixers were up 64-61 last time I checked after trailing at halftime. They won easily the other night, but you talk about adjustments, and you noticed something in the first half of this game, Mo.
Yeah, I think I watched the game one, and they were double-teaming Joel Embiid almost every time and making him pass. And in the first game, players like James Harden and some other guys stepped up and just knocked down threes and scored. But the Nets decided to stay with that philosophy in the first half. It worked because James Harden only had 2 points, and other players were struggling to score. Now it's working itself out now that Philly's up 64-61, like you said, so we'll see. But as a coaching staff, I bet they stay with that philosophy and see if they can. Actually, I just saw it. Yeah, they do. They're double-teaming and make them kick the ball out. So we'll see how that works. And, you know, interesting things happen in a series. Here's the other thing. In a seven-game series, people out there, you need to realize that if you lose game one by 30 or by 3, you still lost game one. So you're down 1-0. So mentally for the team that lost, it doesn't have that much of an effect that fans think. Oh, shoot, they blow us out by 30. Well, what that does is give us some specific things we can work on to make it a game. And also, it's just a loss, people. Players, it's just a loss. We lost by 50, it doesn't matter. It's just, I mean, you can just think of, I remember the Lakers losing to Boston in Boston by 50 and then winning the series the next game. So, you know, blowouts in the playoffs aren't as impactful as people think they are.
Yeah. And when you are, and another thing we talked about before we came on the air, when you are an underdog and you're playing against a team that has a dominant player such as Embiid, you have to give up some stuff to try to take away their focal point. Hey, I'm gonna have to let some guys take shots, and if they make it, we're not gonna win. And of course, if Embiid just goes off, we're not going to win. Cause what I'm trying to say, Mo, like in this series, the margin for error for the Nets is small for Brooklyn.
Yeah, I mean, they have to have a solid game plan, and they have to execute it, and they have to get lucky, quite frankly, because talent is on the Sixers' side. It's not brain surgery. Now, the Nets have some role players that have stepped up and done a great job. Cam Johnson had 22 points at halftime for the Nets. He averages 16. So, you know, he's had a great half. But in the NBA, teams have even the average teams have too many great players. So, you know, you're going to double team Joel Embiid, and you got James Harden, you got Maxey, you got P.J. Tucker who can get a corner three. You got all these guys that can step up. The key for a seven-game series is to make the guys you want to shoot the ball shoot it at the right time. Right. So if you're in an important possession, you don't want Embiid to shoot it. Don't want Harden to shoot it. Maybe you want PJ Tucker or someone else to shoot it to beat you. You know, that was a key, like playing the Bulls. I mean, you know, you don't want Michael Jordan to beat you, and that's easier said than done. But they still had Scottie Pippen and all these other guys that could do it. So it's really difficult to take, you know, one player. Even if it's a great player, look at Denver with the Joker. I watched that game the other night. They tried to take the ball out of Joker's hands, and you know Jamal Murray guys stepped up. So you know it's you know you take your chances and you bite your tongue as a coach and close your eyes and hope it works sometimes.
and I want to get Steve has a question about how many hours you put in a day as a coach. But before you answer that, Paul, to your point, I was at a Pistons game earlier in the year, and we were there early, and we were watching Ricky Rubio, who was coming off an injury. He was out there getting shots up early, and he probably hit 33 pointers in a row. I was telling my daughter, this guy he's not a shooter. But standing out there by himself, he did 33.
Well, it's like he's not an NBA level shooter, but that's another level. I mean, you were at practice here with the G League team, and they were shooting like that. I mean, NBA people don't understand how good these players are, man.
These guys are good, man.
Ricky Rubio is a below average NBA 3-point shooter, which makes him an exceptionally solid, spectacular regular basketball shooter. You know, so. You know, and that's just the fact. I mean, you know, they're that good. And making shots with nobody on you is so much easier than when defense is flying at you, closing out, or being physical. So, you know, it's a different game. I mean, it just changes. You know, I've had players that can't miss in practice, and then they can't make a shot in a game, you know, with people on them. So. You know, there's just different levels of shooting. And, you know, but like a great example, Ricky Rubio, if we were scouting whatever team he was playing on, he would be a closeout short and slow guy. That means you close out not all the way on him, and that means you close out slowly to him because he's a driver. Now, if you're talking about Curry, you close out fast and hard and all the way out to get him off the three-point line at 35 feet. It doesn't matter. Yeah. That's two different scouting reports, right?
Yeah. And Steve's question, how many hours would you put in a day as a coach? And let's kind of preface that regular season, playoff season?
Well, regular season, playoff season, pretty similar, really. But it's game day, non-game day. So, and on the road, not on the road. So, you know, like on a non-game day, you know, as an assistant coach, I practice at 10. I'm in the office. I'm in my office at 8. I'm probably breaking down some film. Then at 9, I'm probably working out some guys before practice. And practice is from 10 to 12. And then after practice, I'm probably working out some other guys till about 1 or 1:30 or 2. And then I'm going through, you know, some more clips or scout report or whatever till about 4. So you're in there from 8 to 4, probably. On a game day, you know, same scenario. I'm probably in at 8 a.m., shoot around at 10, 10 to 11, work out some guys 11 to 12, have video session from 12 to 1. Those guys probably go home. I stay and get a workout in maybe, and then go over some more of my scouting report. And then guys start coming to the game about 4:30. And then we got a group of the young guys that work out on the court, 4:30 to 5, and then the first group at 5 to 5:30, and then the second group from 5:30 to 6. Then we have the clap team meeting. Then they go off for the game from 7 to 9, 9:30. Then I come back into the office, and I break down the film for another hour or so, and then maybe meet with the head coach and get out of there about 11:30 or midnight. So there you go. I'm 8 to midnight, or I'm 8 to 4 or 5.
That's a glamorous life, the NBA.
Yep, exactly. But loved every minute of it. Got to do a game I loved, help players get better, you know. And then, you know, say, you know, after that game, you know, during a series, we're probably practicing at 10 in the morning and then getting on the plane at about 1 or 2, flying to whatever city, getting to the hotel, having another video session, and then get ready for the game the next day.
Wow. Today's game would be huge for Brian Winters. Yeah, the way Brian could shoot it, yeah.
Brian, in today's game, Brian Winters, for those of you who don't know, Brian Winters is about a 6'6 shooting guard from South Carolina, I believe.
Yeah.
That could shoot the lights out. I saw him get 50 against Denver Nuggets. Here's a story about Brian Winters that you might like, Steve. Everybody might like. So we're playing, I can't remember, somewhere, Seattle maybe, and Brian Winters goes 0 for 22. And then the next day we fly to L.A. and we play the Lakers, and he goes 20 for 24.
Wow.
And I was sitting next to him in the locker room, and a reporter from L.A. Times came up and said, "Brian, you were 0 for 22 last night, and you come into L.A., you know, and you get ready for this game, what were you thinking?" He said, "I was thinking I would make the next 22. That's how I thought."
And
Brian Winters would, Steve, if you're looking at Brian Winters in today's game, he would shoot between 15 and 20 threes a game, I bet, right now, and probably make 10 of them at least. So, yeah, he would be perfect for today.
He would make a lot of money in today's game.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
As a sniper, I remember a similar story. Covering the Pistons with Riff Hamilton as our great friend Ralph Rebel checks in. What's up, Ralph? And Riff had a great night, but he had come off a night where he did not shoot the ball well. And the reporter was saying, Riff, how did it feel to break out of that slump? And Riff Hamilton was saying, "Slump? What slump? I wasn't in a slump." Quoted some numbers. He said, "I wasn't in a slump." I mean, that mentality of shooting the basketball, you don't even let that creep into your mind.
No, that level shooter, if you're that level shooter, here's the rule. You shoot to get hot, and you shoot when you're hot. You shoot to get hot, and you shoot to when you're hot. But guess what? You shoot.
That's Hey, man, that's a good life right there, brother.
You can't be no Ricky Rubio and do that, though. You're open for a reason.
Let's see. Ralph Real says, Big Mo, I'm back, and I'm sending those magic posters soon.
Oh, good. Good
deal. All right, Ralph, we appreciate that, brother. And, of course, you're watching. We got next with Paul Mokeski. I'm Ricky Hampton. Mo, let's get to some of these games, too, man. We'll go back and kind of recap last night right quick. The Hawks, Celtics, I just see this. This is a mismatch, Mo. I don't know what Atlanta can do to make this a series.
No, that's it's going to be a gentleman's sweep, five games. Hawks may get one game in Atlanta, maybe. Boston's too deep, too good. Atlanta had their run a couple years ago when they surprised people, and then they just haven't been the same since. They changed. And you know what? They let go a good coach, and they hired a good coach, and nothing has changed, gentlemen. You're the same team because it's the players.
Yeah, it is indeed the players. And I think this is going to be this series, interesting series. Four seed Cavaliers and the Knicks. The Knicks went to Cleveland and got a 101-97 victory last night, a couple of nights ago. No, it was last night, I believe.
Yeah, I think last night, yeah.
Your thoughts on that series, Paul?
Well, I think, like I said before, I think it's going to be a good series. It's kind of like the, not directly, but kind of like the old versus the new, right? You know, the Knicks got Randle and they got Brunson, who probably one of the biggest mistakes since letting Steve Nash go as a free agent that the Mavericks did was let Brunson go. They have an old school coach. Playing in an old school building in the Garden. And then you have the Cavs, years past the LeBron glory years, and, they have a great young team. They got one of the best backcourts in Garland.
Mitchell
in the backcourt. They got some, they're really long. Mobley and those guys are really long. They play good defense. Both teams are not very deep now. Their benches are really short, but I see this as a knockdown drag out six or seven game one. And I think you can still pick the winner. It's going to be exciting to see the Knicks back in the playoff line in the Garden. What a great thing to see.
Yeah. Yeah. And a game we got coming up, later tonight, in a few minutes, just as we're getting off the air. Game two of the Sacramento Kings and Golden State Warriors. And that was, I call that the coming out party for De'Aaron Fox the other night, Mo. He was terrific. And he's been in the league, I think, 5 or 6 years, something for just like, where did this kid come from? He's not a kid, he's been there. But the one thing Sacramento can really do is score the basketball. And they don't mind getting in a shootout with Golden State because we know Golden State can score. And they got the victory over them.
Yeah, I mean, people need to understand, like players like DeAndre Fox and guys like that, they've been around a while. But this is what we talk about all the time. They're in the draft at 19, 20 years old. They're not ready yet. Most players just aren't ready yet. Now he's coming to his own in the right situation. And then the kid, Monk, that had 32 last night or two nights ago, he's playing well. And, Sabonis, in my opinion, is an underappreciated big in the league, who had 12 points, but he had 16 rebounds. He's a tough left-handed player, kind of like Dave Cowens, The thing I'm in Vegas, so I always bet the over with these two teams. But here's a stat for you: Golden State lost by 3, but they had 31 assists and 15 turnovers. 31 assists. I mean, most teams in the NBA game will have 21, 22. They had 31, where Sacramento only had 18. If I'm Sacramento, man, and I'm on that coaching staff. We outran them. You better watch out, man. Warriors want to get up and down the floor. And Klay Thompson's back at 21. Curry had 30. And this guy named Wiggins is back. He had 17. And he doesn't even have his legs under right now. And that's a big key for them. And, Draymond Green is, I think he's lost a lot, but he's still there. He had 4 points, but he had 9 rebounds and 11 assists. So, if I'm a betting man, and I do sometimes, I'm taking the Warriors tonight. But it's going to be a good series.
This could go 7 games, you think?
I'm telling you, like we talk about must win and all this stuff. This to me is a must win for Sacramento, because if they lose this game, then they're going to go 1-1. I believe the Warriors blow them out both games in Golden State, because we both know their records at home and away, right? So if the Warriors win this one and go do their job at home, they're up 3-1, and Sacramento can't come back from that. So in my opinion, this is a must win for Sacramento to me.
Yeah.
But it's going to be a good series. If Sacramento wins tonight, it's going to go 6 or 7. If Sacramento loses tonight, it might just go 5, 6 at the most.
Wow, and you kind of throw out what the Warriors did during the regular season because of their experience.
Well, I think Wiggins being back is huge. And also, guess what? They're only going 90 miles down the road for their road trip.
Yeah.
I mean, hell, they might not even stay in Sac. Just go home and go in for the game and go home again.
Yeah. But it was definitely a great atmosphere.
When I was with Dallas, Sacramento had, they had great teams of Vlade Divac and Chris Webber. And Doug Christie, and going into that arena to play, even though this is a bigger arena, but the fans are the same. They're really loud. They're really behind their team, and it's a tough win to win in Sacramento, no matter when you go in there. So, and it's exciting to see them win again and light the beam, right, or whatever.
whatever that is, light the beam. Ralph is checking in. 71-68 Philly in that game.
Philly's winning this game. Going back. Philly's winning this game one.
Yeah, and Philly's gonna win or lose tonight. I don't see Brooklyn winning this series.
No, because Philly can go to Brooklyn and win. Brooklyn, give them credit. They got scratching the claw, and they're playing great. They are the team that Brooklyn was before they did the amazing trades and signings and the amazing three, Kyrie and Harden and KD, and we're going to win 10 in a row. And, before that, they were a down and dirty, gritty team that won playing hard-nosed basketball. That's what everybody liked about them. Then they went and blew that up and got all these, the dream team, and that didn't work. So now they're full circle back where they were probably about 5 years ago. And quite frankly, I like this team better.
Hey, Paul, you know Mark Cuban. You work for Mark Cuban. Do you think when he pushed the button for Kyrie that he was just going for the splash over a guy like Brunson? He just comes and plays and puts in a hard day's work on the basketball court. Nothing flat, just a very productive play. They clearly underestimated what Brunson meant to that team.
Like I said, the two biggest mistakes that the Mavericks have made over the last 15 or 20 years, whatever, is when I was there, they let Steve Nash go as a free agent, and Phoenix Suns signed him. And I was there, and I know what was behind that. Steve Nash was, and rightfully so, was going to make 20 or 25, whatever that million was a year. But at the time, we signed him to a 4-year deal. But in the long run, because it would put the Mavericks over the salary cap, and they would have to pay luxury tax, that would cost Mark Cuban over the four-year period another $60 or $70 million. And now combine that with during the last year or two there in Dallas, Steve had a bad back. It was painful to watch him after games. He would have his own guy come in and stretch him after games, and you would hear him yelling, crying in the training room because they just stretched that back out. And they made a decision with the doctors that they thought Steve's back was going to give out on him, and that was the end. And they didn't want to. Mark didn't want to put in the regular $100 million and then another 70, whatever that was. And what happened was Steve went to Philly, went to Phoenix, and was MVP of the league for 2 years straight. That's what happened. And if he would have stayed in Dallas, I would have two rings on my finger at least. We would have beat Miami for sure with Steve, and probably another one. But this Brunson deal, letting him go for nothing, pretty much, was another mistake. And whatever their evaluation of Brunson was, he's too small, not a true point guard, doesn't fit in with
Luka.
With Luka, because Luka handles the ball and Brunson has to handle the ball. Brunson's best games in Dallas were when Luka was hurt and out, by the way. And then they played good in the playoffs. So they took that evaluation and said, we're going to let him go. And in the long run, we're going to bring in Kyrie, and we're going to let some other role players go that are killing it in New Jersey, by the way. And and what do we get? We get the same guy that Brunson was, except older and not as effective, because Kyrie wants the ball, has to have the ball. Same with Lucas. So that was a huge mistake. But those were in my opinion, those were the thought process that went through both those moves. And I knew, and you know this too, Kyrie never is going to fit in with Dallas. He's an alpha player. Luka's an alpha player. He has to have the ball in his hands. Luka has to have the ball in his hands. He wants to take the last shot. Luka wants to take the last shot. He has a huge ego. Luka has a huge ego. I mean, that's not going to work.
and him coming in really hurt Tim Hardaway Jr. too.
I mean,
he almost disappeared.
To me, that was we don't see our team going anywhere past at least the first round like we did last year. So we're gonna roll the dice and bring in Kyrie, who's a spectacular player, and see if we can go this 1-2 punch and get to the finals. But and if you looked at their roster, there's no way that was really gonna work.
Yeah. Let's keep it moving, man. We got some good ones here. Moving on to let's see, where do we want to go here?
Let's go with the Suns and the Clippers.
Suns and the Clippers. That was the game of the day yesterday, I thought. Wow, what a great game. Clippers 5 seed beat the Suns 115-110. Kawhi Leonard, 38 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists. Just a great game down the stretch.
Yeah, here's what you got to do, Ricky. You got to take the seeds out of the West. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, it really does.
It doesn't matter. The Warriors are the 7th seed, the Lakers are the 8th. It doesn't matter. Seeds in the West are bogus. They don't matter. But, you know, this is going to be a 7-game series to me. You look at the talent level that's out there. You look at the experience. Leonard had a spectacular game. And here, remember I was telling you about some guy, a veteran guy that can score and is an NBA scorer called Eric Gordon. Remember I told you about that?
Yes, sir.
And the Clippers pulled that trigger, and he ended up with 19 last night. And that's the kind of guy you need on a roster. Westbrook, even though he only scored 9 points, he had 10 rebounds and another 8 assists, but made 2 key defensive plays, even though one was a foul at the end of the game. And then you have Zubac, who's a big average. He got 12 and 15 boards. And you know what? The Suns played pretty good now. KD had 27, Booker had 26, Aiden had 18. CP3, he only had 7, but he had 11 rebounds and 10 assists. So this is going to be a battle of, you know, who plays well and hits the biggest shots at the right time. And last game, it was the who made the biggest defensive plays at the end of the game, and that was the Clippers. Availability. So, Chris Paul's been hurt before. KD's been hurt before. George is out, right? So that's going to have a play in this series in the long run. Watch.
But Westbrook made some great defensive and hustle plays down the stretch yesterday. But he's going to have to shoot better than 3 or 19.
Yeah, and that's not going to happen. He is what he is, man. He's not going to become a good shooter. You just got to make – don't – we talked about this before. Well, I'm open. Yeah, you're open for a reason. They want you to shoot. If I'm the Suns, I'm begging him to shoot 20 shots, please. Just keep him out of paint. But instead of taking that shot, drive it. Get a foul, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. And look at that picture. Those sweater things, whatever the heck they were wearing, they got to get rid of those.
They were more?
Those sweaters they were wearing on the bench. That's terrible.
Yeah. I'm watching this video here. Phoenix is going to have to do a better job rebounding down the stretch, too. You know, yeah, the Clippers got offensive rebound after offensive rebound.
That was at the end of the game.
Yeah.
They gave the Clippers 5 or 6 more possessions, and that will get you killed in the NBA playoffs. And they couldn't grab a rebound. And, Ayton's a good rebound, but he needs help in that. That's probably the reason Chris Paul had 11 rebounds, and nobody else was rebounding.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think this too is a series where losing at home is not a big deal. I mean, you don't want to lose at home. But both of these teams are capable of going on the road as the Clippers just demonstrated.
Yep. Yeah. It's going to be a good series.
Westbrook hit 2 crucial free throws. That kind of put it. That put him up 3 with 17 seconds to go, and. I forget what happens here. Oh, the great block. And hits it hard. But one thing he does, I mean.
Is that a block or a foul?
Well, they didn't call it.
No.
But his effort is always there.
We're saying he hit a guy in the arm. It was a foul.
But, man, you're so right about Eric Gordon. And he always looks so calm out on the court.
If you're a team and you're making a run in the playoffs and you need some help scoring, and there's a veteran guy out there like Eric Gordon that we know he could score, he'd go for 25 next game maybe, and he knows what he's doing, he is what he is, and you can get him on the cheap, you do it. That's a no-brainer. You do it.
Yeah, absolutely. So that was a good one. Let's get to you. But I know Steve wanted to hear about the Bucks when we first came on, Mo, and I know that was painful as a former Buck legend to watch that last night. But Giannis went down, and the Bucks, I think it really threw them off to start. And by the time they got their feet, they were kind of too far behind to do anything. So they took a 130-117 loss to Miami in game one of this series. The reports today is the Bucks are hopeful that Giannis will play in game 2.
Yes, everybody's hopeful.
Yeah.
Whether he's got the back for it or not. I mean, here's the problem I had. The Bucks didn't play very good. You know, and it looked like Giannis went out and everybody, what was the final score?
130-117.
Yeah, so it wasn't even close. And in my opinion, the Bucks have enough firepower without Giannis to beat Miami. They should. I mean, okay, take Giannis out of the lineup. You got Holiday, you got Grayson Allen, you got Middleton, who had a great game. You got Brooks Lopez, who needs to play better. You have Portis, you have Covington, you have Joe English, you got Jay Crowder. You have enough firepower to beat them without Giannis. So suck it up, act like you're not going to have him, and go win the game. And that's what really upset me with that game. Once Giannis went down, they like fell apart. Come on, man. You've won without him before. You need to step up. And now with Middleton being healthy, and you know, what did he have? He had like 29 or something, whatever he had.
Middleton had 33 last night.
Yeah, so you need to go in tomorrow and say, Giannis isn't playing, we're just going to win the game. And then if Giannis plays, it's a bonus. Because in my opinion, he will play. But the problem is, he might only be 70%. So then where are you? You're going to have to win without him anyway. So, and then, you know, Hero went down, broke his hand. He's out.
I was going to ask you about that. I mean, Hero had a solid game for them. He only got 19 minutes in, but he was 5-9 from the field, 12 points, gave him a good energy. He was plus 13 for the night. What does losing him mean to the Heat?
Hell, he made a shot. He made a three-point shot with a broken hand. He made a three-point shot with a broken hand. So he hurt his hand. They passed it to the corner while his hand had holding his hand. He caught the ball, made a three, and then went into the locker room with a broken hand. But here's it's a big hit for them too. But how about we dial in Robinson? Right, you're paying him Duncan Robinson. You paid him hundreds of millions of dollars. It's time for him to step up. You need to throw him in a good spot. That's where he was 2 years ago, right? Yeah. So he needs to throw him right where Hero left him. Oh.
Yeah, Duncan got 6 minutes last night. It will be interesting to see what if his minutes step up. Somebody's going to have to fill that void.
But you're gonna find out where the coach's confidence is. So. Yeah. If you look at the roster, it's a no-brainer. So Hero goes out, Robinson gets 25 minutes. That's it.
But how does that get decided?
The coaches.
And how they sit down and.
Well,
do you lobby as an assistant? Would you, if you had a guy, would you lobby? You know what? I like Duncan taking this spot.
It depends on what he's been doing for the last 2 months. So he hasn't been playing games, right?
Much. No, he hasn't played much.
So you know what we do? You know when I talk about my day and when I work out guys before or after practice? Yeah. Those are the guys I'm working out. So if I go, I'm telling you guys, Robinson Duncan, he's been shooting the shit out of it. He's in shape. He's ready to go. We've been running extra just for this minute. So let's give him some good minutes and see what happens. But it's up to what he's been doing and how much confidence he has. And then when we're in our minds, we're going to let him play 25 minutes next game. And he goes in and he stinks it up, and I got to go find somebody else. Or he steps up and there's my guy. Forget about it. So, you know, it all depends on what's been going on. And you got to rely on your assistant coaches, because the head coaches, they go up to their office, and guess who's working out those guys and running them afterwards? We are. You know, let's play 3-on-3. Let's get up some extra shots. Let's get up some sprints. I have drills that you shoot and you run sprints. You shoot and you run sprints. So you're ready to play when you're ready to play. Now, is he going to be rusty? Yes. Is he going to be out not in playing shape? No. But he can get through it. If he's, 2 years ago, he was the guy, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And as Ralph Ruhle pointed out, Tyler took Duncan's minutes. Now he gets them back. He'll get his chance. But Mo, you also look at that guy's attitude when you're working him out too, right?
Sure.
Is he going through the motions? Is he working?
Well, quite frankly, he'll just tell me I'm not doing it.
Okay.
That's his attitude. Hey, let's go get some running and shooting in after this practice. Gotta go home for dinner. Or that's a good idea. Let's do it. And you know what, Coach? I'm gonna come in early tomorrow. Let's get that in tomorrow. So now you see. Yeah. That's part of the whole process.
And you passed out too, right?
They have no idea. They don't know. You know, some guy could take someone's minutes and perform okay, but like what's his name? The guy in Miami that took his minutes. What's his name? Lyle or Kyle or whatever.
Tyler Hero.
Yeah. No. The other guy that was just mentioned.
Duncan Robinson.
That took his minutes. Ralph said something.
Yeah, Ralph was talking about how Tyler Hero's emergence.
No. He said someone else just took his minutes.
Tyler took Duncan's minutes. Now he gets him back.
Oh, okay. But they have another guy that has been.
Oh, Struce.
And Struce made some big threes, right? But he's not as good as Duncan. He's not. Yeah. So we'll find out. It's going to be interesting. And you'll see this is going to play out during the game tomorrow. I will bet Duncan Robinson gets Hero's minutes right off the bat, and then they'll see how it goes. And at halftime, they'll make another decision. We stick with him? You know, his legs are a little heavy, but do we stick with him? Or are we going to go with Strauss?
And this circles back to the conversation we kind of had earlier about in series, stuff comes up, man. Stuff happens. And the coaching decisions, everything is kind of amplified on another level because you're only focusing on one team at a time.
And that's why they call coaches, that's why people use pessimistic. We're not pessimistic, we're realistic. Because guess what? Yesterday morning, if someone on that staff in Miami wasn't thinking about what if Tyler Hero gets a broken hand? What if he can't play? What do we do? You need to think about that before. Because you never know what's going to happen.
That's crazy, man. couple more games. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think, and let me say the Bucks Miami, they're playing in Milwaukee. If Giannis is 70%, Bucks win that game, I think.
Yeah, I think the Bucks have won the series still. And I'm trying to see if I can get an update on this.
Philly's up by 10, 11. Philly's up by 11 in the fourth.
Okay. Philly's up by 10. Let's we got two more games to go to. I want to finish up with this Lakers game. And we'll talk a little bit about the Nuggets and Wolves. And the Wolves got to go back to the drawing board. Your buddy Chris Finch is a great coach, Mo, but you can be a great coach, and that don't matter when you're playing against a superior team.
Yeah, I mean, plus you got to add what happened with Gobert and all that stuff, and it's going to be a tough series. You know what? But series change on a dime, right? Something happens. I actually texted Chris the other day because in the playing game, I like they threw in some zone there, and it really helped them. You know, maybe they do that a little bit more against Denver. And see if they get the ball out of the Joker's hands. And, things can change. So, if Minnesota goes in and wins that game and they're on a plane going back to Minnesota 1-1, everything is different. The skies are blue. The sun is shining,
What needs to happen for Minnesota to make this an interesting series?
Anthony Towns needs to step up. Anthony Towns needs to be the superstar they need him to be. So he needs to be a 12, 13, and 8 guy. And I saw the playing game, they were actively denying him the ball. and they struggle to get him the ball at the elbow and the free throw line at the end of the game. I know in the fourth quarter of the loss, I think to the Lakers, he didn't have a shot with still like 2 minutes left in the fourth quarter. So Anthony Towns has to step up and be the superstar for them to win this series.
Yeah, he had 11 points, 10 rebounds, 5 of 15, 1 of 7. See, that's too many threes for me for Carl Anthony Towns.
Hey, he's getting stuck there because when Gobert's in, Gobert operates on the low block in the short corner, so there's nowhere for Towns to go. So here's what you do, Towns. Do what Joel Embiid does. Stop settling for the three. Take the ball on the dribble and get into the paint and do your little pull-up shots.
Can they play effectively with the ball?
I think so. If they do the right thing, like I just said, for sure. And I think they got to play more zone on defense. And then you have 2 7-footers and they're getting rebounds on the zone. But he flat out, he's got to play better. He's got to play better. He's got to get 30, 10, and 8. Or they're not going to win. And, when you go back, like, on the airplane or whatever after a game, and I used to do this all the time. And then if we lost, I would circle our stars. So if we're playing back in the days with Dallas, and we have Steve Nash and Mike Finley and Dirk Nowitzki, if I look on the scores in the box score, and I see Dirk has 35 and 10 boards and 8 assists, and Mike Finley has 28 and 8 boards and 10 assists, and Steve Nash has 14 points and 3 rebounds and 6 assists, we're not going to win then. We're not going to win if all three aren't doing good. We're not going to win. So I circle Steve. Same with the Bucks. Now here's the key, like the Bucks. So you have, if Giannis is healthy, you have Giannis, you have Middleton, you have Holiday, and you have Portis as 4 guys that can get you 30. And you also have Lopez in there that has had 30. So now, you can circle 3 of those guys, you're going to win that game. Yeah. You can circle 3, did their job, we're going to win that game. But if you only circle 2, we're probably going to lose. So, Minnesota, if you're not circling, what's the thing's name? Yeah, you're not going to win that game because, Gobert is Gobert. Gobert's going to get 12 points, 12 to 16 rebounds, 4 or 5 blocks, and that's what he's going to do. But he can't get you 30.
Yeah.
Anthony Towns can get you 30, and he needs to. And I'm telling you, if I'm the coach and I'm the coach's staff and I'm talking to Chris, and if that's not working, then I'm gonna recommend we need to sit Rudy Gobert then and figure out a different way and have Townsend in the lower post. I'm sorry. And we play Rudy Gobert 15, 20 minutes, and then we play without him in the fourth quarter.
Coach, we just traded everybody in the world for
him. Yeah, I understand that. That wasn't our call, though, Chris. That wasn't our call. That's what the general manager owner did. Now, do you want to win a series? Do you want to win a game in the series? Or do you want to justify that trade they made? Your call. I'm just telling you what I think.
Tough business.
And I can show you on video. I can show you on video. I can break that down. I can break down game one. We can break down every possession that Gobert and Towns were in at the same time. We can break down every possession that just Gobert was in. We can break down possessions that just Towns was in. We can break down what shots Towns got when Gobert was out. And if my theory is right, I can prove it by watching the video. Towns scored 80% of the shots when Gobert was out.
Wow.
So I don't know that for a fact because I didn't see the video, but
no, that's your point. I got your point.
That's a process that can be done. And I'm also pushing, Coach, we played zone 10 times and we got 7 stops. We need to throw that in more.
Gotcha. Another good game of the night was the Lakers beating Memphis, I think 128-112, quarter way down the stretch. Looking at Ja Morant going down with a wrist injury. Man, those high flyers like Morant and Zion Williamson, they get up high, but you gotta land.
But that's why I didn't jump. Gotta land.
I kind of like the Lakers in this series, even with a fully healthy Morant. I just don't trust Memphis. They hadn't shown me enough to go against a team with a guy like LeBron and Anthony Davis.
They don't have Aquaman, Steve Adams in the middle. So the middle's wide open for all the Lakers. And, you know, that you can't, if you're a team like that, you can't lose. You know, even though he's not a big scorer, he takes up space, he's a rebounder, he's a tough son of a gun. And you lose a piece like that, you know, that, and, you know, they also lost, I can't remember the guy's name, one of the other high scorers.
Clark. But,
yeah, you can't recuperate from that. And, you know, the Lakers have made moves. You know, and guess who, you know, LeBron played okay, AD played okay, but that's not who won the game. Austin Reeves won that game. And one of their other guys coming off the bench, they won that game, you know. And that's in the NBA playoffs, everyone talks about the superstars, but a lot of the time, the role players of the team are the guys that win series. And you asked Charles Barkley that, and, you know, because – pretty much your superstars are going to do what they do, right? And the role players got to step up. That's why the philosophy is, you know, your role players in a playoff series play better at home than they do on the road. That's the thought process. But you know, it wasn't true for the Lakers last night. But the role players stepped up and put on a show. I am that guy.
Yeah, the awesome duo of Austin Reeves and Hachimura.
That's right. Lakers.
Not LeBron and AD. They were able to coast last night.
I don't have the stats in front of me. Do you have what LeBron did and what AD did?
LeBron had 21 and 11 assists. Let's see. Yeah, I got it here. Let's see. They had four guys with 24 and some more. LeBron had 21 points, 11 rebounds, 5 assists. Anthony Davis, 22 points, 12 rebounds, 3 assists. Reeves, 23 points. Hachimura, 29 points. And quietly, D'Angelo Russell was 19 points and 7 assists. He has been a big upgrade over Westbrook, hasn't he, Mo?
Oh yeah, and that's you know. So now, if you're in their locker room, you know, and you're LeBron and AD, you're thinking, you know what? We had an okay game, but now guess what? If we step up. You know, and these guys are still with us. No problem, man. We have no problems now. So that's another process that's going on. And not even thinking about it if Morant is hurt. But by the way, the Philly won by 12. So chalk that up as Coach Mo prediction.
Yeah. They made halftime adjustment. They were down about 6. And Mo, and the injuries. Because now you got Xavier Tillman is your starter instead of coming off the bench for the Grizzlies.
That affects everybody. Like, not only that sub has to be a starter, someone else has to be a sub, right? And that guy hasn't played for a while, probably. So it's a chain reaction, dominoes.
Right. And Jaren Jackson, I thought he played great there. Now he was 31 points. And he had 31 points, and but only 5 rebounds. They're going to need him to rebound better. And he's really the only big they got to deal with Anthony Davis down there. And Hachimura had 6 rebounds. It's a bad matchup, I think, for them. And you know, I go back to experience and maturity too, Paul.
Yeah, I mean, and the Lakers are smart enough, I think. They've been there enough because they need to get this series over fast. Like, they need to sweep them or get it in 5 for 2 reasons. Number one, to rest, because they're going to play the winner of Sacramento Golden State. I think it's going to be Golden State. And also, so Anthony Davis doesn't fall and break his ankle.
Yeah. You know, they thought he hurt himself yesterday.
Yeah, I mean.
And he came back and
so in a 7-game series, you want to get off the court with the win as fast as you can, and you want to get out of the series as fast as you can and get on to the next series. So that, if I'm the Lakers and if I'm LeBron, you've been there before. Listen, guys, we need to crush them tomorrow, put it in, and go home and take care of business, so we can get ready for whoever's next.
Paul, what is it that Russell is doing that Westbrook just couldn't do?
That who's doing?
Russell.
Well, I think he has a he makes better decisions, has a better basketball mind, can shoot a little bit better, you know, and he's not as stubborn of driving in and trying to make something happen. So, and I guess maybe he's not as sensitive. I mean, Westbrook is so sensitive.
Yeah.
You can't call me Westbrook. Who cares what they call you? Just play.
Yeah.
But you know, he's in a different situation in the Clipper land. That's going to be interesting because he's trying to prove a point. And maybe he found a home.
Yeah. But
but if you look at the Clippers roster, though,
They got a great roster.
But they don't have a point guard. So giving Westbrook with a team that doesn't have a point guard makes sense, right? I'm trying to find their roster.
I'll get it for you. Clippers. Clippers last night. Westbrook was their point. Then they go to Terrence Mann off the bench, and he's not really a point though.
Nope, he's a 2.
Yeah, he's 6'5". He's a. They have. You're right. They really don't pile.
They have Paul George, who's hurt. Kawhi Leonard, Norman Powell is a forward. Zubac's a big. Marcus Morris is a
Bones
big.
Highland.
Who?
Bones Highland, from a rookie from VCU, would be their next.
Yeah. So that's my.
He's
that's
a
my
rookie.
Point. Yeah, that's my point. They don't have a point guard. So getting Westbrook makes sense for them. He's a point guard. So he's not taking the ball away from whoever. He's a point guard. Now it'd be interesting. Because Paul George handles the ball a lot when he plays. So when he gets back, who's going to handle the ball now? You know, Kawhi likes to handle it, and Paul George likes to handle it. You know, right now you have Westbrook that handles it, and Leonard, 2 guys. Now you're going to add a 3rd to that.
And you know who played well for them? And he will continue to do that. I have so much appreciation for this guy now. I haven't watched him play a whole year. Is Mason Plumlee. Yesterday he had 7 points, 11 rebounds, and in 17 in 20 He had 17 minutes, 7 points, 11 rebounds, 2 assists, 3 of 3 from the field. It is only free throw in 17 minutes. That guy, he will not hurt you when he gets in a game.
He's a big body. He knows how to play. So let's think. So the Clippers had a good roster in that training deadline. What did they do? They added Eric Gordon, a scorer, and they added Plumlee, a big. Perfect. Yeah. That's really good, general manager. Really good decision to add those two players to your roster at the right time. Perfect.
Yeah. So, well, we'll see, man. Hey, Mo. We went a little bit over, but hey, it's just so much to talk about.
Yep. We love the game, man. And now,
yeah, man.
Now we're going to see Golden State play Saturday. It's going to be interesting.
Yes, sir. Hey, and
Golden State.
You like Golden State tonight?
I like Golden State. Yep.
Okay. And we want to thank everybody for tuning in. Thank you for all your comments. Bishop Marcus Mooney, thank you for checking in with us, sir. We appreciate you.
Hey, Marcus.
Out there for checking in. You can get this show on Believe.com, BLEAV.com, or any place where you get your podcast. But until next time, for Big Mo, Paul Mokeski, I'm Rick Hampton. Peace, everybody. Enjoy the playoffs.
Peace.
Peace.